guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Better late than never. Conduits of Trouble for this week. We're recording on a Friday. A lot going on this week, obviously. As always, Zolgad and Star Tribune sports columnist Chip Scoggins, who was at Target Field for the double dip on Wednesday. Chip Scoggins, where do you stand as far as the Twins' early season struggles? They did avoid being swept by the Red Sox by coming back to win in a walk-off on Thursday. But what is your takeaway so far from what we've seen from the boys?
Yeah, it's weird, Judd. This might sound crazy to some, but I still think they're a good team. But it's been flat. I think their performances have been flat. I don't see a lot of energy or urgency yet from them, whether they're at bats. Rocco's insistence on taking starters out early is maddening. The injuries with Donaldson and Buxton, that's what we talked about before the season.
Yep.
That's key. The lack of production in clutch situations, which I think will even out over the year, because I think they do have good enough hitters that that'll, even out. So it's just been kind of, is blah a word? It's kind of blah, I think.
Yeah, that's a word. Explain to me give me your thoughts and explain to me what you believe to be the case when it comes to Rocco and starting pitching. Because taking Pineda out when you've lost five consecutive games and you're about to go 1-6 if you lose that game on that homestand. Now, they came back to win. But taking Pineda out after 88 pitches when that guy is a mammoth man who looks to me like a guy who, if he nears 100, is not going to melt for pitch count. This is starting to drive me crazy because it's like there's a template to baseball and every game is the same to Rocco and Falvey and Levine. And that's just not the case.
Judd, do you think Rocco's approach or philosophy in terms of trying to protect players relates to his own health issues as a player?
You know, Patrick brought that up and it very well might. But I also think there's a so at positional players, yes, I think that that's correct. My bigger problem is with pitching, and this is not, look, he would not be the first guy to have this problem. And to me, it goes beyond his own issues with injuries and his health as a player. I don't think he necessarily understands pitchers and pitching, which is, akin to kickers in football or goaltenders in hockey. The pitching thing, I think, is a different subject, and I think it comes down to his lack of understanding, which is not a problem. What you need, though, is somebody that totally gets it. And I think Wes Johnson is very good at what Wes Johnson does, but I don't know that they have anyone in the dugout who necessarily knows how to think like pitchers think and what empowers pitchers. So I think there's two different discussions here. When Polanco gets a hangnail and Rocco rushes out there, I think he sees himself. On Pineda at 88 pitches, I think, or Berríos in Milwaukee, who, again, I wouldn't have allowed to pitch that entire game, but certainly could have come out with a no-hitter for another, or he could have come out and pitched for another inning. I think that's a breakdown of understanding the actual people that perform that job.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the pitchers, Judd. I don't know if he is so dialed in and consumed by analytics that he ignores or undervalues the human element. And I go back to the playoff game. Jose Berríos is rocking and rolling. Looks strong. Yep. Looks like he's ready to compete. This is what we've all been waiting on. This Jose, this Berríos, this is what we've been waiting on. And they pull him out. And it's like, where is the human component like in that equation? And it just felt like that was strictly analytics driven. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if he's just so enamored or so wired or so, in tune with what front office and numbers guys say that he just doesn't weigh the, I don't want to say common sense, but just the human part of it. But it's like, when you see a pitcher rolling, and if he looks strong and you don't feel like he's scuffling or in needs to be removed from the game, I don't know that you're risking long-term health by letting him pitch another inning. I just don't. I mean, there are going to be plenty of times when you have to have the quick hook.
Yes, exactly.
Why have the quick hook when you don't need it? Because I just, I don't think pitchers are going to fall apart and be not themselves if they pitch 200 innings in a season,
Well, and I get
I don't think it's going to take years off their life.
No, exactly right.
Their career, not life.
Or their life. But, yeah. but you're exactly right. And the thing that I don't get about it is what makes sports great, what makes games great is that every game in its own way is different, right? Like, that's what makes it fun. Like, if they weren't, I wouldn't watch. It's the soap opera component to each game being its own little story, but yet it's the same game. And it's almost like Rocco, who's not a dumb guy, and the Twins aren't dumb, but it's almost like they've got a template for this is how we do things. And it's like, but don't you understand that people are different and pitchers are different? And I'll give you a one when it comes to Barrios that frustrates me, okay? Jose Barrios has a lot of games where he gets off to really good starts and he clearly starts to think about things and then he starts to nibble a bit. But there are games where he doesn't, and I don't know why, but he's fantastic. Aren't those the games to empower him and let him go a third time through? Because that's the guy that we all want. And my contention is that there are times that he starts to think because he has been basically trained by this coaching staff and by Rocco of, if I start to scuffle here, if I do the wrong thing, I'm gone. And so it's almost like he gives it too much thought, because I think he's a sensitive, pretty bright kid himself. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Twins, I am all into privately sitting down and saying, how can we empower him at different times to let him know, one, we believe in him, and two, if he's going good, he's not coming out necessarily at the first sign of trouble. But, You tell me this. How do the Twins treat Michael Pineda different from Barrios, different from Shoemaker? It's almost like there's just a blanket over all of them.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same template, as third time through the order or certain threshold of pitch count. Here's the thing, Judd. If I were to ask you to give a percentage, what percentage would you say that a Twin starter will pitch a complete game this year?
Not being a smartass, about 5%.
What was the smartass one going
to
be?
I was about to say 2. I took it up to 5, but I'm saying 5 sounds ridiculous. But I'd say it's about 5%.
Yeah, it's just that's the thing. This is where we're at, Judd. If you saw a Twins pitcher starter pitch a complete game, I would be shocked. Like, I just saw, something remarkable.
It'd be like an alien spaceship landed on 94 in Woodbury in front of your car. We come in peace to pitch a complete game.
It is. I mean, it shouldn't be that historic of a thing or feeling for someone to pitch a complete game, but it's just we've become so conditioned to seeing 5 2/3. Let's go to the bullpen.
Yep.
It's like, holy cow. It's these games, feel like forever because you see so many pitchers pitch in them. And it just feels like overmanaging, mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's, I assume it's because of the analytics influence, you watch a game today and I was at the doubleheader the other day and it just cracked me up. But who was it that was playing left field then? Was it Garlick?
Kirilloff?
Kirilloff. And I think it was Tommy Watkins, whoever the coach on bench was up on the top step, just waving him, get over. We got the shift, you got a position. Honest to God, the guy took one step. Took one step to his left, and gave him a thumbs up. He's like, all that waving to take one step.
Yep.
Like that's going to make the difference? Like, he couldn't make up that one step when he's running? And then, of course, there's a blooper in front of him. The next thing is just, he couldn't get to it. But there's just so much. And maybe people think this makes baseball better with all the shifts and pitch counts and pulling, starters before they face the line for the third time. But it just feels like overmanaging a lot of time. And it sucks the joy out of a game sometimes when you're watching it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just old. You know, I don't get it.
No, there's some things that I agree completely with. And I just think the Pineda thing, what I don't understand, and it's a word that you used before, and I agree completely with it, is it's almost like at times that common sense is not applied. So, like yesterday, Pineda, okay, you've got a chance. He's pitching great. I believe he was at two hits, one walk, and something like six strikeouts or something through seven, and he's pitching fantastic. And you've got a chance to say, you know what, let's give him the eighth. Let's see what happens. And what makes no sense about it to me also is, I believe, Chipper, that he was at that point in time five batters through the third time through the order. So it's not like he had three, four, and five coming up. I think he was about to face, if he had come out for the eighth, batter six in the Red Sox order. The point being is you've gotten through the toughest part. It's just as if there's a lack of common sense to say, you know what, in this case, let's give him the eighth. Let's at least see. You know what? If we gotta go hook him. I get that. I don't understand it. And what worries me personally goes back to the playoffs. Nothing's been learned here. Nothing has been learned. If Michael Pineda throws 98 pitches, he's not going to be unavailable. And the day before, and I know that they were seven apiece, but the day before, you played a doubleheader and used your bullpen. So, like, everything says, give Pineda the eighth. Let's see. Yeah. And instead, they're like, no, that's not how we do things. And there's nothing, and I've been told this by smart folks before, there's nothing that bothers smart people more than this is how we always do things.
Yes, I know. And Judd, this maybe doesn't give him enough credit, but do you think subconsciously it gets in the starters' minds that, okay, I'm only going to go five innings or six innings?
Yes.
Like that's the bar now. Like, that's acceptable. That's what is expected of me now. Just getting to the fifth inning.
Yes.
You know? I mean, I'm 100%. Sure we all love to pitch a complete game, but when you never do it and all you know is, okay, I'm probably going to go anywhere from four to six innings, that sort of becomes what your expectation is, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm telling you with Barrios in particular. I think you, by not empowering him, you cause him at times during games to actually struggle earlier because he thinks to himself, if I don't look great here, I'm gone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can see, like, remember the playoff game, just that video of his disappointment when Rocco was telling him in the dugout. I mean, it's just like, just let them be competitors sometimes. Mm-hmm. And give it a shot. I just, you know, and I'm sure they could come back with volumes of data to tell us why we're wrong. But I just think there has to be a human component to this sometimes, that where the manager has the leeway to say, you know what? Screw the data. I'm trusting my gut. My guy is going strong. I look at him in the dugout. We had a good talk. I'm going to trust him to get another inning for me. And it's just, I don't know there's that latitude anymore in baseball.
It feels like there's not. It feels like it's gone. And I don't think that you can win a World Series without, well, you know what? Blake Snell, right? Tampa Bay last year, World Series. He is the poster child. Like, he is the Rocco poster child for you're done. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on a second here. Elimination game, World Series. This guy is lights out. He is a competitor's competitor. You know, he's pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
He is shoving. There is literally, cliche, no tomorrow. And that's it. Like, your book tells you that's it. What are you doing? But you know what? There is nothing that would make you believe now, Chip Scoggins, that if Rocco Baldelli had been in charge of the Tampa Bay Rays that night, that he wouldn't have made the exact same move.
Sure. And you wonder how many managers would, because they're told this is what the data tells you you're supposed to do. And it's being run a lot by analytics, whether it's shifts, whether it's pitch counts, whether it's whatever, that so much of the numbers, and they're probably accurate in a lot of cases, but that's what drives me crazy though, Judd. I think drives you crazy, a lot of people crazy. It's like, I understand it. I understand the value and importance of ALA to do it. But at some point, there has to be gut instinct on this, on these things, and just intuition and feel and yeah. and just human nature that you say, you know what? Not now. Don't give me the numbers now. I'm rolling with this guy right now. And I would think if you're a competitor, yes, analytics have helped your career probably in a lot of ways, but it also probably drives you crazy. You're like, God, I wish they'd just trust me here. You know, have a little trust well, in my competitiveness.
And it's case by case. I mean, that's
and
the thing about
game.
It.
And game by game.
Yeah, and pitchers are a unique breed. And to not treat every start like its own little story is a
sure.
it's a mistake. It's just a mistake. You know, Pineda, like I would, if I manage the Twins, I would tell those guys at the start of spring training, Michael Pineda is a guy I'm going to ride because look at him, look at his contract, look at his age. The worst thing, the worst case, he breaks down and guess what? I'll replace him. Like, I like him, but now Barrios, I a little bit different because he's my future. I get that. There would be different times that I would empower him. But Michael Pineda, I would use as my bell cow. And I would say he's going to pitch a ton. And very worst case, he gets hurt. But but it's going to happen regardless. I mean, pitchers get hurt.
Yeah,
their arms give out. You know, it happens.
And to go back to your circumstances, Judd, like yesterday, like if I'm Rocco, and I'm thinking, you know what? We have just lost 5 straight games,
yep.
and we've looked bad doing it. And my bullpen has been shaky at times. And Pineda, yes, he's at, was it 88 pitches?
88.
Yes, he's at 88 pitches, but he looks good, feels good. I'm rolling. I don't care what the number says. This is a situation where, you know, yes, it's early in the season, but my gosh, we can't have a 6 straight loss going on the road. You know, they've got to stop this. And so I would just say I trust Pineda more than my bullpen right now, the way he's pitching. You know, the next time out, I might feel differently. But today, I trust Pineda. And so I'm going to roll with him. And it's just not that way, you know?
Correct. What would you do? And I know that you did a column about this coming off the double dip on Wednesday. What would you do, despite the home run he hit on Thursday, when it comes to Miguel Sano?
Judd, I don't know what you can do other than ride it out. I mean, you can't send him to St. Paul. I don't think he has options as a
he doesn't
right as a seventh year guy. I don't
he doesn't.
So people are like, just send him down. Well, that's not even an option.
Right.
excuse me. I guess you could try to trade him, but he ain't exactly selling high at this point. You know, I was talking to Phil Miller, my colleague, and he said, well, you could, you know. Kirilloff played some first. Maybe you could platoon those two guys, but is getting less at bats for Sano the answer? Probably not.
Well,
I think Judd, I honestly think, and this sounds like a cop out and a cliche, but he is what he is. And you know, at some point, he's going to get really hot. And for 2 or 3 weeks, he might carry you, he might hit a bunch of home runs and win a game. And all will be forgotten for the time being, and then he'll go back into the strikeout slump. I just think this is what he is. I don't know what you do, to be honest with you.
I think you're right. Now, I think you're right about your assessment. What I would do is this. I would do what Phil said. I would get Kirilloff up here, and I believe they can call him up Saturday without him having the accrued year of service time. So I would get him up here, and I would for now go to a platoon. Because I actually think Sano gets worse the more he plays, and playing him every day to me had become grossly unfair. And I know that he hit the home run on Thursday, and that might change things a little bit. But I would still get him at bats. I would still play him. I wouldn't play him on a daily basis. I would play a rise and left Donaldson as long as he stays healthy at third, and Kirilloff can play some first. There are days you could probably play Kirilloff in left or Rise at third to give JD a rest and Sano at first. But I just don't see the good in Miguel Sano playing every day going like he's been going now basically for 2 years. And I think he's going to hit the hot stretch regardless. and you just ride that. You just take that wave and ride it. But I don't, but he's also, to what you said, and you're right, he's going, the hot stretch is going to end, and he's going to go back to being the guy who flails. And so it's sort of a, it's a dance, but I do think that you do him and the team, with how good the teams expect to be, I do think you do them a disservice by just basically saying he's going to keep playing.
Yeah, and you know, like the other day in game one, you know, runner at second, seventh inning, last inning, you know, they pinch hit for him when he's hitting .079 or whatever it was.
Yep.
It's like, he had no chance. But two things on that thought, what you're saying, Judd, is, or questions for you. One, do you think mentally and competitively he would handle being a part-time player, you know, the right way and with the way that you think you're going to get what you want, you know, desired out of it? And two, do you have a problem your third highest paid player being a part-time player?
Making
$11 million this year.
Yeah, I don't like it, but I need to give my best chance, my team the best chance to win continually, and I don't think him playing on a daily basis does that. And it would get Kirloff at bats, which I think is good. It would give you the opportunity, depending on what your rotation is, because Donaldson's going to rest at times as well.
Sure.
Is this ideal? No, but you're right. If you try and trade him, you're getting nothing back. Like, no one's going to give you a damn thing.
Yeah.
And so I think it's over the top to say, who cares? I think that's too much.
Yeah.
That's not going to be what they're going to do. So I'm just trying to find a way here. Given now basically 2+ years of struggles, I'm trying to find a way here to do what's best for both sides.
Well, you know, I asked Rocco about Sano after the game, and they're like, you know, what are you seeing from his at bats? And he said, well, he's being selective. He's not swinging stuff out of the zone. He's seeing the pitches that he wants to hit. He's just missing them. And, you know, I got to thinking after, I was like, is that more reassuring?
No, it's worse. I got that very tweet from a person who said the exact same thing, which is he's not being dumb at the plate. He's actually on top of good pitches. And I said, that's a bigger indictment. I would rather have you say he has no clue right now than, because what you're telling me is he can't catch up to pitches that almost everyone else who works in the same league can catch up to.
That was my exact thought, is like, okay, that's great that he's not, you know, swinging at sliders out of the zone and swinging at pitches he can't hit. But if he can't hit pitches that are in the zone and right down the middle, that's probably even more alarming to me.
It's worse.
You know?
No, it's worse, Chip. It's the equivalent. It's the equivalent of saying the wide receiver has great speed. He's always in the right place. The one thing, and the passes are great, but he can't catch the ball. Troy Williamson was not reassuring when he dropped balls that he got, you know, he's breaking away from the defender, and Troy is going to, and he's in the perfect position to catch the ball, and now it just went off his hands. That's what Miguel's doing at the plate.
Yeah, well, and that's what, you know, when he came up in that pitch hit opportunity last inning there, the game before, that the third pitch that he struck out on was 96, right, basically right down the middle, and he just missed it. And
yep.
You know, we've seen his timing get off and then he get it, but I just, you know, it's one of those things, fool me once, fool me twice, you know, it's, we know what's coming. And if that was my lead, is like, it's inevitable. This is what's going to happen. He's going to hit a home run and we're all going to marvel at it. It's going to be majestic and he's going to get hot for a couple weeks, but it's not changing. When you're 27 and you've had 2,300 plate appearances, this is who you are as a player. And you know, it's annoying, it's frustrating, but I don't know that anything they do is going to fix it and make him more consistent player, because I just don't think that's how he's wired. And guess what, Judd? It's like, this is what baseball is. They reward this, right? Strikeouts do not matter to teams as much anymore.
Right.
I don't know if they matter at all, to be honest with you. As long as somebody can hit a home run occasionally, the power surge. So this is, you get rewarded for being this type of player sometimes.
You do, but I think what's most concerning is when you are on top of pitches and can't hit them.
Yeah.
And
these strikeouts are just absurd. I mean, when you're striking out 40% of the time, that's not sustainable. Sorry.
Speaking of annoying and concerning, Byron Buxton, my man. Off to off to an unbelievable start. Best start of his career. And I think we talked about it last week. And my God, he was punishing the baseball and he looked outstanding at the plate. And you could not have asked for more. And we all asked the question, okay, keep showing this for a while. Don't get hurt. He now has a hamstring. I have no idea when he's going to play. You know, they're going to say, oh, he's fine. He's got, we expect him to play tomorrow. And then the next day they'll say, no, it's going to be tomorrow. I mean, this chip, this is exactly what we talked about why it's going to be so tough to give him a contract.
I wrote about this, before the homestand, before they came back. So how many games have they played so far?
Are they six and seven?
Six
and seven. Games? No, I think they're at 13 games.
Yeah. 13 games. He's missed four of them.
Yep.
So he missed one outright in Milwaukee and three on this homestand. He missed he came out the third game or third inning of the second game, right? And then he missed the game, then he came back in and pinch hit and hit a home run, right? So he's mm-hmm. missed four complete games and parts of two others. Mm-hmm. So basically half of their games, he's either missed or not been available for the whole game. And the other seven, he's been one of the best players in baseball.
Yeah.
There's your conundrum.
Yes. So who is he? And how often can he do that?
He's a great player when he's on the field. And what is the value of that? And I did like a fake negotiation between his agent and the Twins. And the Twins guy or his agent kept saying, and he's becoming a superstar and a best player. And Twins, yeah, but injuries. And he's doing all these great things. Yeah, but injuries. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's like you can't ignore that you are a completely different team with him, and he's your best player, one of the best players in baseball when he's healthy right now. But the Twins also can't ignore that he's missed half their games in a short season already. So I don't know. I'm going to be fascinated to see what that kind of, because they start talking contract negotiations with him in spring training. So it's going to be fascinating to see what that looks like when it gets done.
It's just, as a sports fan, it's so maddening to see because, like, you want to watch this guy play. You want to watch him play, and yet time after time, you know, he gets hurt. He's out. It just drives you crazy.
Well, and Judd, and I think you tweeted, and I noticed it too, like on grounders that he knows he's not going to beat out, he's not running them full speed like he was before. So you wonder if this thing's been bugging him for a while.
Yes, yes. In fact, he didn't run full till, I want to say it was it one of the Milwaukee games? He didn't run full speed, and we were concerned that there was something wrong, or it might have been in the Detroit series.
But you know what, Judd? But I was on the phone with you. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And we're like, oh, did he come up hobbled?
Detroit. It was Detroit.
Yeah. That was a week ago.
That's right.
Whatever that was. Yeah.
And I thought something was wrong, and then it wasn't. So I assumed that he just decided, probably wisely, not to go full tilt. And then he did the same thing at Target Field against the Red Sox. And so I thought the same thing. And that's when he then had a hamstring. So I think you're right. I think it probably goes back to that at bat against Detroit or at some point in time around then.
And so, you know, they're probably being smart because these hamstring things, if you don't get them right the first time, it's going to be an entire season thing. And so
got him and Donaldson.
So I don't know, John. I mean, if you're the Twins negotiating, how would you handle it?
Well, I mean, you can't ignore it. You're right. And so I guess it would play a big role. I mean, there's never any time. And look, I think he's so much fun to watch, but there's never any really extended period of time where you have health from him. No. So I can't give, unfortunately, I think I'm at the point where knowing what my limits are from a dollar standpoint, I don't think I can give him a contract that there's a chance he's going to get from the Dodgers or the Yankees or somebody else. I can't spend that because I need, and you know what, too, Chipper? I just spent on Josh as well. And Donaldson's costing me a ton. What, $92 million over 4 years?
Yeah, he's making $21 million this year.
And I don't know how much he can play.
Judd, but is Buxton, he's going to be your highest paid player at, when his new contract kicks in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he has to be, right?
Well, but that's what I'm saying is I don't think I can do that.
What are you going to do? Not give him a contract?
Well, I look, at this point in time, I think I allow him to hit the market and see what he can get.
Really?
I think I do. Well, he's never healthy. Like, that's the problem. And if you pay him, you can't then turn around and pay another, you know. Well, and here's my question. So prioritize here. You can keep one of two, Berríos or Buxton. Who do you keep? Because you financially might not be able to keep them both.
Gosh. I don't know. my head says Buxton, but I don't know. What would you do? I think probably Buxton.
I unless I get a year of healthy Buxton,
which you won't get. You're not getting.
I think I go Berríos. I don't. I can't risk it. I can't risk this guy. I mean, Chip, it is literally, and I like him. Again, I'm not trying to be a jerk. It is literally always something.
Mm-hmm.
And well, he finds weird injuries, weird maladies. I mean, you just go through the. I've never seen this before from a player.
No. Well, and it's you know, there's obviously been some big ones, but it's like these. What did he have in or Milwaukee? He was sick, right?
Yep, and food poisoning, I think.
That wound up covering like 3 days.
I know.
Part of the first game, the full next day, and then half of the, you know, he came in late in the third game. And then now the hamstring, who knows? Yeah, it's like the drip, drip, drip of these things. And so there's never that consistency of being able to rely on them. But, I agree with you that I would do it nervously. But it's just so hard, like you mentioned, he's such a great player that changes the game. It's just hard to ignore his impact when he's there, and to think that you're not going to reward that financially some way. Now, you know,
I'm with you completely. It is a conundrum of conundrums.
Yeah, and it's and you know, his side is not going to try to diminish the injuries and focus more on the production, which any agent would, but it'll be interesting to see, how Falvey and Levine handle this and how much hardball they take in trying to get a deal that protects them, just the inevitability that he's not going to be available all the time.
And my guess is because of that, the Buxton camp is going to try and, or not try to, my guess is that they're going to turn the Twins down because the offer is probably going to be exactly what you said there and hit the market to see what they can possibly get. Cause you know, it just takes one team. I mean, takes Boston to say, baby, we're back and Byron Buxton's our final piece. And you're always going to get the team, the idealistic team that says, we'll keep him healthy, right?
Yeah. And, you know, excuse me, when I wrote that column, you know, I wrote well, who cares what they pay him? There's no salary cap. I mean, it's just a billionaire. Why do we care what Poled, how much money they make or how much money they do? Because it's a billionaire. Well, teams impose their own salary cap on themselves, right?
Yes.
They have this is what our payroll is going to be, and we're not going above it. And we can complain all we want about that, but that's just how it works. And the other thing is, my kicker back on was, and no one complained about Joe Mauer's contract.
Yep.
Of course we did.
Yep, because you know what? It stopped you from doing other things.
Yeah.
You're exactly
and
right.
That's the thing. It's like they're going to set their threshold on their payroll. And as much as we should say they should just spend whatever, and there's, you know, some valid argument to that, that's just impractical purpose. That's not how it works. And so they're going to have their own limit on what they spend. So it might come down to a Buxton versus Berríos type of thing with their payroll.
Do you have draft fever yet, Chip Scoggins? Are you looking forward to the draft in a couple of weeks?
Judd, it's weird. I think it's just different. Obviously, when we were the beat people, beat writers, we consumed it for weeks on end. I paid so little attention to it because of you know, the March Madness and the twin starting and then the Patino firing and just everything, all the news that we've had. I've paid so little attention to the NFL draft, other than they better draft a left tackle or, you know, we're storming the building. No. So I don't have draft fever. I honestly couldn't tell you the date of the draft. I guess I better get up to speed on it now. I know it's what, next or 2 weeks from?
2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks from yesterday?
A couple Thursdays, yeah.
So I assume it's going to be offensive line heavy early on, but.
Well, could be a defensive end for Zim. Zim, I was going to say, don't discount Mikey. Mikey might say, quitty pay.
I will say this, the Gladney situation, does that mean they're going to need another corner now, probably?
Yes. Well, and Mike Hughes, can you rely on Mike Hughes?
No.
Like, he's fine. He's going to be fine. He's got a neck problem. Come on, guys.
Yeah. And have you been able to count on him before?
No, of course you haven't.
So I assume they're going to be in the market for another corner and rush in, which means they'll take a defense in round one, a quarterback in round two, and they'll get to that left tackle somewhere in the mid rounds, right?
No, actually, here's my theory is Brian O'Neill gets moved to left tackle, Rashad Hill right tackle, because they like Rashad Hill more than we do. They keep and then they brought him back. So here's your worst case Vikings offensive line opening day 2021. Brian O'Neill, Dakota Dozier, Garrett Bradbury, Ezra Cleveland, Rashad Hill.
That's worst case scenario. There's no way Dakota Dozier is going to be their starting left guard.
I would agree, but I never say. But with these guys, when it comes to offensive line play, I never say never.
Okay, if you gave 5% on a Twins pitcher pitching a complete game, what percent do you give Dakota Dozier being their starting left guard on opening day?
If the head coach was paying attention, zero. Because it's Zimmer, I give a 20% chance.
Really?
They brought him back. I don't trust him. I don't trust. Yeah. He's going to battle. Right now, he would battle this guy that they brought in from the Cardinals. Mason Davis, right?
Yeah. I think you're probably right that Brian O'Neill moves over there, which would lead me to believe they're going to take the best guard available
in
round one, and then that guy's your starter.
I hope you're right.
So I think that's where they do it, and then you take a rush in round two. But maybe they get a a left guard in round one, and then still you're counting on a rookie. You know, yes, he's a first round pick, but there's no guarantees that he's going to be an all world player from the first day. So he may have some growing pains there again. So good luck, Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, Kirk Cousins, fend for yourself. Feel that rush this time. Don't drop the football.
That's right. Oh, boy. It'll be interesting to see, if Zimmer's influence shows itself in the draft like it has in the free. Their defense has definitely got better, right? I mean, their defense is going to be miles better than what we saw last year.
Yep.
But until they shore up that offensive line, I'm not ready to say this is going to be a playoff team yet.
All right, Chip Scoggins, I'll talk to you next week, all right?
All righty, brother.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.